You know, there's no getting around the fact that growing up is a tough thing to do these days, whether you're a young child or a school-aged child or a teenager. And there's no getting around the fact that it's tough being a parent of a child growing up. There seem to be hazards everywhere. Maybe we could call them even road hazards on the road of growing up that both children and parents and the other adults involved in those children's lives must face almost on a daily basis. There's a quote that says that parenting is a tough job, but when you get there and get to be a parent, you end up wishing it were that easy. It's just not easy to be a parent and not easy to be a child these days, because there seem to be so many more road hazards, if you will, on the road of growing up, many more difficulties in growing up. Maybe we could talk about some of those hazards, first of all, in the area of home hazards. We're all aware of the spiraling divorce rate and what effect that has on our children. The disruption that that brings, the sadness, the anxiety, and the feelings of insecurity that certainly can affect a child, maybe even the rest of his or her life. But you know, there's more home hazards than just the divorce problem that we all face in our country. There's a problem with just the unavailability of parents. We live in such a busy world and a busy society that we as parents frequently find ourselves so tied up with our jobs and our activities and our commitments that we find ourselves unavailable for our children. Maybe the unavailability comes another way. Maybe it comes from television. And maybe it comes from the elaborate kinds of toys that are available for children, all of which are not bad in and of themselves, but they too contribute to making parents unavailable. And unavailability of parents is a major hazard along the road of growing up that our children face. Then there's the hazard of parents, we as parents, being afraid to take the role of being a parent. Now, the Bible is very clear that we are given the authority in the home as parents to be the parents. That doesn't mean we rule with an iron hand. That doesn't mean we rule as tyrants. But it doesn't also mean that we stand back from our responsibility and refuse to take stands. Many homes that you and I are familiar with maybe take a different approach, however, than what the Bible would say, and maybe the family runs like a board of directors where people can vote on the issue, and whichever vote wins, that's what the family is going to do. I think I found that that's a very destructive hazard for children growing up. They really need their parents to be parents. Parents who understand, parents who listen, parents who care about how the children feel and listen to what the child has to say, but also parents who are willing to take a stand, willing to be tough when they need to be tough. There's another road hazard that our children can face, and that is the problem of we parents who tend to be perfectionistic parents. You know, we work so hard to do the right thing the right way and not make any mistakes as parents. We want to be perfect parents. We all seem to have that desire, and yet nowhere in the Word of God is there a command to be perfect parents, only a command to love our children, to raise them in the admonition of the Lord, to discipline them, and most of all, for fathers, not to encourage anger in our children. But there is no command to be perfect parents, and yet many of our children live in families where parents really strive to be perfect, not understanding that God has not asked us to be perfect parents, but only loving parents who care and are willing to take a stand. So there are lots of home hazards that affect all of us, and we're all faced with the hazards of the home and what can happen in home to help deter our child from their growing up process. But as if the home hazards weren't enough, there's also the world hazards. You can't turn your radio on or your television or pick up a newspaper or magazine without reading and hearing about all of the horrible things that are happening across the world. Famines, wars, killings, terrorists, all kinds of horrible things happening, environmental disasters. And you know, in the world that we live in, with increased communications and availability of information, our children are constantly bombarded by all of the hazards, all of the horrible things that are going on in the world. And I find that when you talk to children, they're very much aware of these things, and sometimes they're very afraid about what this means, particularly in combination with the fact that many of their parents seem unavailable to talk to them about the horrible things they hear about that are happening in the world. Another hazard that our children face is cultural hazards. You know, we live in a culture that seems to worship three things. First is affluence, money. The more money you have, the better person you are. We all, I think, are infected by that desire to make more money. To make money is certainly not wrong in and of itself, but when it is a prime goal in life, that is a problem. But there are other things in our culture that are a hazard. Not only the desire for money, but the desire for success and achievement. Now, success and achievement, too, are not wrong in and of themselves. But if they are the primary goal, they will get in the way of our children's growing up, because, you see, nothing replaces relationships between moms and dads and kids in the process of the child growing up. So not only is there the desire for and the goal of affluence or wealth and the goal of success, but then also the goal of personal peace. The feeling that says, you know, when I get home, I don't want to be bothered by anything. I don't want to know about all the poor people in the world. And certainly, even from our directed towards our children, we may say, you know, I don't want to hear about all the problems you had today, or about how you feel about this, or how you're worried about this. We seem to be seeking a personal peace. Now, certainly, I'm not saying that any of those goals are inherently wrong, because I think that some of those things are a part of living everyday life. But when those become our primary goals, we're in for trouble. Our children are in for trouble, because, you see, in all three of those goals, there is no hint of relationships. Relationships are not involved in those three goals, in obtaining wealth, success, and personal peace. So yet another hazard is found in our culture that our children face, and that is that there's always a desire for things that are not involved in relationships. Yet there's some other hazards, particularly as our children get older and they enter the school years, and particularly as they enter the teenage years, and they find that there are peer hazards, the hazards of peer pressure. Now, I want to be careful to say here that peer pressure is a part of growing up, and there's no way that it can be totally avoided. In fact, peer pressure is an important part of growing up for the teenager as they begin to separate from their parents and they begin to establish their own life, their own thoughts, their own ideas. They will be, for a while, fairly dependent upon that peer culture. But when the peer culture begins to direct a child's life totally, then we're into some difficulty. You know, if you listen to what goes on in a lot of the peer kinds of interactions and in their culture, in their music, in their literature, and in their talk, well, there you hear some clear themes. One of those themes is that, you know what, life is really just a series of chances. You kind of take chances at every step in your life, maybe every day. You try this for thrills, you try this for gratification, you try this to feel better, you try this for success. And really, life is just a bunch of chances, and you just keep trying your chances and you hope that you get some good luck. Now, those words may not be the specific words that are said, but that seems to be the implied message, that, you know, life is just a series of chances. We as adults know, and the Bible teaches, that life really is a series of choices. There's a poem written by Robert Frost that I can't quote directly, but it says something to the effect that, you know, life is a series of choices. And we know that one choice leads to another choice, leads to another choice. And somehow down that road, we can never come back to that earlier point where we made the initial choices. So many of our kids live in a peer culture that says, you know what, life is just a series of chances. Take your chance and see what happens, and maybe you'll get some good luck, maybe you won't. There's some encouragement there also that I would like to share with you, and that is that as important as peer pressure is, it's certainly clear from the studies that people have done and from experience that in the end, it is not peer pressure, it is not the peer culture that directs the child's life and decisions. It is really the parents. And what we as parents do or don't do, what we as parents say or don't say, that's what will in the end have the most effect on our children. Nevertheless, though, the peer culture, the things that go on in our child's peer groups, are very difficult, and they indeed can be hazards to the process of growing up. There are further hazards. Certainly, we're aware in the world we live in of the many emotional hazards that our children face. Emotional hazards being those normal kinds of feelings of sadness, fear, and anger, but when they get out of control, they are certainly hazards to the road of growing up. They are impediments. They are roadblocks, literally, sometimes, to children growing up. The first we might talk about would be sadness. The experience of sadness is a part of life for everybody, even for our children. Sadness at loss, sadness at losing something important to them, sadness at something that was said to them. But when sadness persists and becomes depression, then there can be a serious impediment. There can be a serious roadblock, even, to our child growing up. This ongoing feeling of being helpless, being hapless, meaning that things never go right for me, and finally feeling hopeless. the roadblock, the hazard of sadness, is a growing concern. Many people, as we notice that depression is becoming a more and more common problem among our children and our teenagers. We're all well aware from the experts who tell us that suicide is now the second leading cause of death for our teenage population, just behind accidents. We're aware that there's a roadblock in the lives of many of these kids called sadness, depression, prolonged feelings of being helpless and hopeless, and profound feelings of emptiness. You know, people do lots of studies with these children to try to figure out what is the common thread. It seems like the common thread is lack of relationships. Relationships are God's most precious gift to us in order to live our lives and to grow through the tough times. There is no way to solve the feelings of sadness without having a relationship to work this through with you, a parent, a friend, or perhaps both. Sadness and depression are certainly an emotional hazard that our children face, but they are not. It is not a hazard that cannot be dealt with. It can be dealt with relationships and making relationships first. There's certainly also the emotional hazard of anxiety or fear. Sometimes I think that Satan's favorite tool in working with our children, his favorite tool in putting roadblocks in the process of growing up, is fear. Many times when I've talked to children who are in trouble with their behavior because they've been acting out, or in trouble because they're depressed, or in trouble for any number of reasons, at the root of all of that is fear. Fear that they will not be loved. Fear that they will not be worth anything. Fear that somehow they'll be lost in the shuffle of life. And when children react from fear, when parents react from fear, we're going to have some difficulties. Fear is one of those emotional hazards that's placed in the way of growing up so many times. Again, relationships will be the key to helping our children conquer their fear. It's not a process of necessarily saying, don't be afraid. It's a process of saying, as parents to our children, hey, I'm going to walk through this with you. I want you to experience that you can be afraid, but you can make it. And the only way I know to do that in helping our children is to walk with them, literally walk with them through that, to be there in relationships. A part of fear also has to be the feelings of guilt, another emotional hazard that our children must face. Now, there's two kinds of guilt. Some people would like to say that all guilt is unhealthy. Some people would like to say that guilt should be the only thing that manages our lives and directs our lives. I think somewhere in the middle is appropriate. There is true guilt. The guilt that comes from truly breaking a law. If you're a child, it starts with being guilty or feeling guilty because you've broken a rule that your parents have. As we get older, it really magnifies itself and broadens itself in the guilt that comes from breaking a law that God has established. Laws that are established, whether we're talking about parent to child or God to us, laws that are established for our own good. That kind of guilt is healthy because it leads to a resolution. It leads to a restoration when the misbehavior, when the source of the guilt has been corrected. But there's also a false guilt. And that's the kind of emotional hazard that many of our children face, a false guilt that comes from not fearing that they've broken a rule, but fearing that they'll lose the love of somebody important to them. Somehow the feeling that because they have done something wrong, they can lose the love of a parent, a friend, another important person in their life. False guilt is very crippling because there seems to be no way out of it. You see, when you're afraid that you're going to lose the love of somebody important to you, you feel trapped. And just making amends for the misbehavior, if you're a child, doesn't seem to solve the false guilt. True guilt offers restoration. False guilt offers only continuing fear, continuing anxiety that I am going to lose the relationship with somebody I love. So guilt, along with fear, is certainly another emotional hazard that our children are tempted with and face as they're growing up. And if not corrected by a loving, healthy relationship with a parent, this emotional hazard too can get to become a roadblock in the process of growing up. Certainly another emotional roadblock or hazard that gets in the way or could get in the way of our children growing up is that of anger. Now, sometimes we begin to think that anger is totally wrong and that we should never be angry. We read the Bible and sometimes we misinterpret it and say, oh, the Bible says don't be angry. And so we tell our children with our words or our action, don't be angry. That's not very healthy. That's going to become a roadblock for our children because anger, just like all of the other feelings that our children experience and we experience, is a part of creation of God. God created us physically. He created us spiritually. He created us thinking-wise, intellectually, and He created us emotionally too. He gives us the feelings that we have, and he expects us to be good stewards. Anger is particularly a difficult one to be a good steward with. We tend to either want to just let ourselves explode with anger and wear our feelings of anger on our cuff, so to speak, or we tend to want to stuff it up and hold it in. You know, I think one of the best things we can do to help our children with this potential roadblock of anger is teach them healthy resolution of anger. It says in the New Testament, don't go to sleep at night without resolving your angry feelings. That means talk them out, work them out. Learn to direct them in a way that is towards the child's benefit instead of towards his detriment. It's sort of like the teapot that's sitting on the stove. You know, there's a flame underneath it, and it's full of water, and pretty soon that teapot begins to boil, the water inside, and that's kind of like getting angry. Now, you have some choices. You can either let that teapot just continue to spout and be angry and spout along, and you know, if you don't do anything about that, eventually that teapot will burn out. Well, the other option maybe you would think of, well, okay, we could put a cork in the spout of the teapot so that the steam can't keep coming out and they won't burn out. Well, if you do that, the teapot's going to blow up. Instead, we need to, using this little metaphor, help our children learn to take that steam, that anger, that frustration, and direct it towards the flame, the source of the anger, in a constructive way so they can resolve the anger. Unresolved anger, whether it's anger that keeps blowing and going and erupting, or whether it's anger that keeps being locked in, it can be a major roadblock for our children in growing up. We as parents hold the key to helping them learn how to handle their angry feelings. Now, we've talked an awful lot about roadblocks. Why don't we talk a little bit now about the hope, about the things, the exciting things that we can do as parents to help our children resolve these roadblocks. You know, I don't think you can lead a child through life and have them never meet any of these roadblocks, but we can help them learn how to get around them so that the roadblocks do not become permanent. So let's talk about some things we can all do to help make sure our children make it through this process of growing up. I think first and foremost has to be the rule in our house and in our family that relationships always come first. And how do you build relationships? The first part of building a relationship is that somebody's got to play a role. If we keep it to the family here, well, mom's got to be moms, and dads have got to be dads, and the kids have got to be kids. Kids don't exist to be the adults in the family. Kids don't exist to take care of the needs of adults. Adults exist to meet the needs of the children. Parents exist to meet the needs of their children. So we take that first building block, the commitment of you and I as parents, that we will be parents. That means that sometimes we'll take unpopular stands. That means that we'll have the opportunity to teach anything about life that we want to teach. But we will be the parents. And then when we do that, we're in the position then to build relationships. And relationships must come first. Relationships come before the rules. Relationships come before school. Relationships come before everything. But the first priority has to be relationships. And those relationships say, when we make them first priority, you know what, son or daughter, no matter what you do, it's covered. You may make mistakes, you may have some misbehaviors, you may even be rebellious from time to time, and there'll be natural consequences to that, not because we want to be punitive, but because we want to do what's in your best interest. But in spite of all the mistakes that might be made, relationships come first. And a beautiful thing comes from that. When people play the roles, relationships develop, and when relationships develop, the child will grow. And as the child grows, growing could be seen as a process of avoiding these roadblocks, negotiating these roadblocks so that you can move on in life. Relationships must come first. The second thing that we can do to help our children negotiate these roadblocks, these road hazards, is to know about kids. You know, it's kind of interesting that kids are born and they don't come with a warranty, they don't come with an owner manual, they don't come with any instructions. It's important that we learn about how kids operate. How can you do that? You can read books. Certainly there's plenty of books available. You can talk to experts. You can talk to your own parents. They've become pretty good experts in raising you. But talking about kids and knowing what kids are all about, how they think, how they react, what are normal behaviors, that's an awful important part of being a parent and helping your children avoid roadblocks. But that's not enough. The next thing I would add is that you have to know your own child. You can know all the information in the world about kids And in fact, in our culture, we know more about kids than probably any other generation has known. We have more factual information and research data about how kids act and how they grow up and what you'd expect. But we seem to have more and more problems. And I think maybe one of the reasons for that is that it's not enough just to know about kids. You must know your own kid. How do you do that? First of all, you practice what we said just a minute ago, that relationships come first. And then you take the time to play with your child, to be on their level, to be in their world, to take that opportunity to teach them about life, whether they're 2 years old, 10 years old, or 16 years old. The next important ingredient would be discipline. And discipline is such a misunderstood term, but it is a part, an integral part of helping our children avoid the hazards of growing up. Discipline needs to be defined clearly as the teaching of a child to be responsible for themselves. So many times we think of discipline only in negative terms and spanking and punishment. Now, discipline is not that. Discipline is teaching our children to become responsible for themselves. Why is discipline so important? I think it's important because it helps our children resolve three fears, again, that face all children growing up. First of all, discipline helps resolve the fear that they won't know the limits. Every child wants to know the limits of behavior. What is acceptable, what is not acceptable. It's sort of like running in a race car with no boundaries if you don't have some limits. Eventually there's going to be a crash and somebody's going to be hurt. Discipline helps get rid of the fear that I won't know the boundaries. Discipline also helps relieve the fear that all children face growing up, the fear that their parents won't love them. You see, discipline is a part of love because discipline is based on relationships come first. We care about you, we love you so much that we will have some rules because we know that these rules are in your best interest. These rules exist to enhance our relationship. They exist to guarantee the best things possible for you in life. Furthermore, it's a part of learning about love and helping resolve the fear that a parent won't love a child because a child truly learns about unconditional love when they have received the consequences, when they have experienced discipline for a misbehavior or a mistake, and then furthermore experience that even though I've made a mistake, my parents still love me. So discipline helps to resolve the fear that my parents may not love me. Thirdly, discipline helps to resolve the fear that every child fears, another fear that every child faces, and that is the fear of growing up. You know, you talk to a child and they can't wait to grow up, but you talk a little longer and you find out that along with those fears, or along with that excitement, is also some fears about growing up. Fear that I don't know if I'll be able to take the responsibility. Discipline, healthy discipline, helps a child resolve that fear of growing up. Discipline is a very important part of helping a child avoid the road hazards of life. You know, another important part of helping our children avoid these road hazards, helping them negotiate these road hazards so they do not stop the process of growing up, is teaching our children about responsibility. It's very important that children learn about responsibility and accountability. And you know what that means, simply put? It means allowing our children to fail while it's still safe to fail, while they're still living at home, and not trying to cover all the bases so that they won't experience failure for fear that somehow failure will destroy their self-esteem. No, failure doesn't destroy self-esteem. It's not being allowed to take responsibility or accountability for yourself that eventually will destroy self-esteem. An important tool in helping our children resolve and face the road hazards of growing up is teaching them responsibility, allowing them to be accountable for themselves at the appropriate level, allowing them to fear to fail while it's still safe to fail. Another important characteristic or another important step in teaching our children how to handle the road hazards of life is teaching them about their emotions. We said earlier, emotions are a gift from God and we are expected to be stewards of them. If we teach our children to over-control or under-control our emotions, we're in for trouble, and they're really in for trouble. If we can't teach our children by modeling, by talking through experiences, how to handle the feelings of fear, anxiety, anger, sadness, and even their own sexuality, which has an emotional component to it, we're asking our children to face the world without any tools, without any implements to help take care of, to help negotiate the hazards of life. Another helpful hint for us would be, as parents, to practice forgiveness and not fear as the basis of our relationships with our children. You know, it's awfully easy to emphasize fear when we're rearing our children. But we already identified that fear is one of those emotional hazards that can certainly become a roadblock to growing up healthily. I would like to challenge each of us to remember what it says in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. It says that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love and power and a sound mind. We must practice rearing our children from that basis. And that means practicing forgiveness, not fear. It means practicing awareness that we're not perfect parents instead of striving to be perfect parents. It means saying relationships come first. Even if you make a mistake, it's covered. Just like the relationship with the Heavenly Father. When we have a personal relationship with Him, the rule is, the message is, even when you make a mistake, it's all covered. We love you. Now, there's also another responsibility we have is, along with this, of trying to teach our children that self-sufficiency is not the biblical. Here without hope. The tomb is not empty. We are not placed here without the resources to help our children grow up healthily and happily. I'm reminded of one of my favorite verses in Jeremiah that says, "For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for your welfare, not for your calamity. Plans to give you a future and a hope." You know, the roadblocks of life, the road hazards of life, do not have to become the end of the road of growing up. Every child needs the relationships with their parents to help negotiate those roadblocks. And in negotiating those roadblocks, they certainly will also be introduced to the perfect Father above, the Heavenly Father, our God.